Good morning. So I'm going to talk about some results from Western Kenya and some Malic 3P soil results is the first part of my talk, and then the second part of my talk I'm going to transition into some of the new approaches that my colleague has taken to do work with some farmer training in this area of Western Kenya. So Melissa Herman, all of us, this project was done while I was at Ohio State. All of us have since either graduated or jumped ship to industry. And so Melissa Herman is now with the Reckoning International, which is a small NGO based out of north central Ohio and works in Kenya and Uganda. And then Robert Mullen is currently with the Potash Corporation. And certainly there are many individuals in Kenya with the Kari Institute, which is their ag institute that has similar functions as the USDA does here in the United States. So just to give you a little bit of a background on food security, particularly in sub-Sahara Africa, a lot of this information probably isn't particularly new, but just want to frame where I'm going to talk from. And so in sub-Sahara Africa, there's about 27% chronic undernutrition. This is less than 2,600 kilocalories per day, is what they consider the nourishment level. This level is a little bit higher in Kenya at about 31%. This compares with 4% in northern Africa, 23% in the Caribbean, and then if you look at the United States and North America and Europe, that number is less than 1%. So we can see that we have quite a bit of way to go in nourishing the people in a lot of parts of the world. So one of the challenges with working in sub-Sahara Africa and all of the countries and even individual countries is that there's a high diversity of farming systems. You have a great gradient of climate from north to south or south to north. You have a lot of elevation differences. You have cultural preferences for food, different practices that have a legacy of being tried and worked on, and just all of that culture that comes in here. With most of the soils, particularly in Kenya, you have highly weathered and degraded soils. So not only are these soils very old and in general quite nutrient poor, but they've been farmed for many, many years and many, many generations, often without adequate inputs, and they don't have that regeneration as a lot of the glaciated soils have had in the sort of closer to the poles. There's also a low availability of inputs, which a number of people have talked about in Kenyan specifically, and likely in other parts of the developing world. Inorganic fertilizer response is consistent. There were a number of farmers I talked to that they said the first year, the second year, inorganic fertilizer, they were able to be able to afford it or able to have somebody donate it to them, and they had fantastic responses, and then that response reduced over the years. So they were wondering what was going on with that inorganic fertilizer since they couldn't justify being able to purchase it every year. So like I said, some years it worked great, and other years they had almost no response to it, which couldn't justify the cost of it. And in Kenya, we looked at the farmers and talked with a lot of them, and most of them have a cattle or two, and so that this can be a source of manure. And so this is what this particular project looked at, which I'll discuss in a moment. I want to give a framework for where we're working. I like having a real mouse up here. So continent of Africa, as many of you know, Kenya is in the eastern part of Africa, off of the Indian Ocean here. And then this western province here is in the far western part of Kenya. This is Lake Victoria here, which is one of the, I think it's the second largest freshwater lake in the world after one in Russia. And so if we zoom in a little bit, expanding this lower part of the western province, you can see here that we have the Vihiga district outlined in these kind of dashed lines, the Kakamega district to the north, Kakamega being a fairly large city in that part, and then the Butera district to the towards the Ugandan border. So we did our research here in the Vihiga district with support from individuals from Kakamega, and that's where we were posted. And then we worked more in this eastern part of the Vihiga district here. You can see Vihiga here, the large town of Kisumu, which is a port town, is down here a little bit, and then we were working over in this area. There's a lot of tea, there's a lot of rice, or not too much rice, mostly tea and maize being grown with a number of other small crops. So when we look at this Sabadia division, which is this smaller area of the Vihiga district, which is where all our farms were at, there are about 130,000 people. Those people are placed in about 28,000 households. The density of people is actually quite high. It's about 1,100 people per square kilometer. If you look at Kenya, the whole of Kenya is about 7,980 people per square kilometer, and a lot of that has to do with the northern region is desert, and there aren't a lot of people that that inhabit those areas. But if you look like it's some of the larger cities in the United States and in Europe, you're approaching some of these densities and some of the, not necessarily like New York, which is 10 times this, but some of your other cities. So it's actually a really dense rural area. So what we looked at is we looked at composting cattle manure. So the idea there is that then the farmer could collect the manure over the season, over the year, and kind of be able to pile it up and not have to worry about getting it onto the field right away when many other field activities, family activities, village activities were occurring. And then also incorporating into that any weeds that they pulled from the field or any other weeds that were pulled kind of from around the area, that this way we had both that higher carbon material and then the lower carbon material. So we looked at three placement methods. There's a fair amount of literature out there that's indicated that one placement method over another may be able to give some increased yields. All of the compost was applied at the same rate. And so our three methods here were we had one that was next to the row, which we called our furrow line. So in all of these diagrams, the little green dots represent our corn plant or our center of our row, and then we have our corn plant here in the yellow, and here about 5 centimeters, about 2 inches from the corn row, we placed a furrow line. And so that would be if you're looking at it from above. If you're looking at it from the side, that the seed would be here, and then you'd have this section of manure over to the side. So that was one of our treatments. Our second treatment was a broadcast and then incorporation. So you just have bits of manure compost scattered throughout the field in between the maize lines and throughout the entire plot. And again, it's scattered to about a 7 centimeter depth is what we looked at. And then we looked at a third placement, which was where the compost was actually placed in the hole with the manure seed. So the hole was dug to about 7 centimeters. We put the prescribed amount of compost. We divided the number of plants per plot and then the amount of compost. So we got the same amount of compost in each hole and the same amount of compost over the plot as that was in the other two. And because it's composted cattle manure and not straight manure or straight fertilizer, we were then able to place the seed right on top of that and then cover it. And we collected quite a bit of data throughout the year, but in interest of time, I'm only going to present the yield data. This is over 2 years. We had 5 farms both years. 2 of our farms are first year bulk harvested before we got there, so we weren't able to get yield data from that. But the first 3 farms are from the first year, and the second 5 farms are from the second year. And so if you look here, farms that don't have any letters after it, there was no significant difference between the plots, between the control, the place, and the placement of there. And all four had the same maize variety. But if you look at these four farms that have some difference, you can see that in this first one, all three of the placements, so just the addition of compost improved the yield over the control. Whereas if you look at the Udanga farm, you can see that only the broadcast and the hole placement increased over the yield over the control. Down at Elizabeth's farm, it was only the hole. And at the Florence farm, it was the hole and the banding. So there's what we found is that compost increases yield, but only sometimes. And this inconsistent results showed up through the entire data set. We looked at stand counts. We looked at the yield components. We looked at the soils at both V8 and harvest. This is the V8 soil. There was no difference by the time we got out to harvest. And so we're thinking, okay, well, how else can we look at the data to see if there are some placement differences? And so what we did is we conducted a Pearson's correlation coefficient. And so we looked at what are the relationships between the data and is there any strong correlation between that. And as you can see, the numbers without the stars are not significant, but we did have two significant responses to our yield. One was the Malic 3, and we saw that as there was an increase in Malic 3P soil test number, that there was also a corresponding increase in yield, which makes sense. As there's more phosphorus available in the soil, theoretically you should be able to get greater yield from your plant in a system where phosphorus is limiting because it's all being absorbed onto the soil, since they're very highly weathered, and that's a characteristic of highly weathered soils. We also found that as there was an increase in yield, there was a decrease in fertilizer response. So we looked at the farms and we said, okay, when we added the compost, did we see a response? Yes or no. It was a simple binary situation. So we saw this decrease in the fertilizer response. So if we put those two together, we find that as Malic 3 and yield increase, there's this decrease to fertilizer response. And by this, I mean the composted cattle manure. And so what we did was we looked at all of the yields, or all of the Malic 3P numbers, and we ranked them from lowest to highest, and we found there was a break between about 10 and 15. So we took the four farms that were below 11 and the four farms that were above 15. We didn't have any between 11 and 15, and we split them into two groups. We called them the low Malic P number and the high platelet Malic P number, and then ran the yield treatment effects there. And what we found is that for the low Malic P, so we're looking under 11, there was one farm at 10.5, most of them were below 8, we're looking at the yield here for the low Malic P, that the control had an average yield of only 2.7 megagrams per hectare, and that any of the compost there increased the yield. Okay, so that's something very interesting. The other interesting piece that relates back to our inconsistent results from all of our other soil test data and stand counts and everything is that when you move into high Malic P numbers, so above 15, that you don't see a response from compost. So we're looking at this as a possibility. Now, again, this was 2 years. This was one site, one area of Kenya. But maybe there's something to this to be able to look at whether a farm will have be able to have some improvement with compost, or whether a farm will be able to have some response to inorganic fertilizer. Perhaps now that there's some places with that compost and with that organic matter being in the soil, perhaps now there's some CEC spots that the compost can that the inorganic fertilizer rather can sort of hang out in the soil and not be strongly absorbed to the soil itself and thus be available to the plant. So that remains something that I would like to see tested. However, I'm not in a position to do it with my current job, and our colleagues aren't quite in a position, but I think that that would be something of great interest. And so all of these were done on, all of these trials were conducted on farmers' fields. They were conducted on a portion of the field. And when farmers found out that my colleague and I were studying soil fertility, they got really excited, which for me was kind of interesting and a little strange, because when I told people in the States that I was studying soil fertility, they looked at me very strange and they're like, wait, you're spending all this time studying dirt? And I was like, yes I am. And then I go and I talk with the people in Kenya, they're like, wait, hang on, I got some questions. And these are three of the questions that they had. They recognized that their soil was poor. They recognized that when they planted corn, they often ended up with stands like this. So this field was planted at the same rate as the trial field that we planted. Okay, so they can look at, okay, well, what's the difference? What's going on here that I can do? And they wonder, should I purchase fertilizer? Because they've heard it's a great thing. It can put lots of nutrients into the soil very quickly. But they've also heard that it's expensive and can't always do what you want. And should I use hybrid seed? It's expensive, but it's not always adapted to the local conditions. And so we talked with the farmers about this, and then also my colleague Melissa, who's on the far left in the top picture, she's working, like I said, with an NGO, and she's over there and she's conducting farmer field days. So rather than discussing how do you make compost, since most of them know or they can talk to each other and get it figured out fairly quickly, we were talking about why is compost important. And so one of the things is she would talk to them about and be able to give them and talk to them about some of the basic soil properties. So one of the she used a lot of analogies, and I'll share some of them as the time remaining allows, but she would say your soil is like the kitchen. If you're hungry, you can go into your kitchen, but if there's no food, you can't eat. Likewise, your plant, when you put it in the soil, if there's no nutrients, if there's no food for your plant, then your plant isn't going to be able to eat. Okay? And she also talked about using your soil as like a bank account. You can withdraw from the soil and you can put money into the soil. Okay? Or put nutrients into the soil the same way that you can take in and out of a bank account. And so then she talks about different ways that you can remove that food from the soil, that you can withdraw from your soil. So things like slash and burn agriculture, burning residue, removing the residue from the field. Things that we take for granted of being able to know, but that for a lot of the farmers, or especially when you're working field to mouth in that subsistence, you don't always think about. And so then she talks about, well, how can we add funds to our account, or how can we put food back into the kitchen? And so she talks about being able to return what you remove from the system. So not only that compost, which she equates to free money because your cow's already there, you're feeding your cow, but instead of feeding it residue, if there's weeds along the road, you can feed that, and that's even freer money because then you can use the residue as supplemental food, or you can put that back onto the farm and find ways to add from the system. And she also, most Kenyans travel by motorbike. It's a fairly inexpensive way to travel. And so she equates, when you're looking at your soil pH, you're looking at adding compost, and you're looking at adding manure. Say you have a motorbike. What do you fix first? If you have no gas in your tank, you have no oil in your engine, and you have a flat tire, which do you fix first? And they all go, well, you fix the flat tire. Okay, well, that's our pH. Until we fix our pH and get that down where we can get some nutrients available, you're not going to get the food out of the kitchen no matter what you do. And then what would you fix next? The engine oil. Okay, that's like adding compost. We need to get the engine oil, and we need to add some compost before we can see some of the other improvements. And then the gas tank she equates to inorganic fertilizer, that you really can't get the benefits from inorganic fertilizer until you've built up your soil enough that all that doesn't just disappear into the soil. And so with that, if time allows, I can answer some questions.
We have time for a few questions behind.
Thank you for your talk. I was just wondering if your organization that you work with has a way to test, because some soils are responsive to the compost and some aren't, to test for those farmers whether their soil would be responsive.
Unfortunately, there are very few tests for the different soil and nutrients that you can conduct in the field. My colleague does have a handheld pH meter, so they can conduct pH measurements in the field, but as far as the other tests, unfortunately, the technology and there aren't kits you can bring out that are easy to use. That would certainly be an area of need, absolutely. Thank you
very much. This is the end of the session. Thank you all for.